Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us. I'm thrilled to be speaking with you today about a very timely topic in the news. We're going to be talking about the latest in healthcare reform and the Affordable Care Act. And just this morning, we learned that we may have the deadline extended for people that have been in the process. We're going to be talking about that. And we've pulled in an expert that we've waited 6 months for her to join us and get on her schedule, and we're thrilled to have her today. In the studio with me is Dr. Karen Minyard, and she is the director of the Georgia Health Policy Center at Georgia State University in the Andrew Young School. She has been a translator of national healthcare reform on various topics for years and years. She has her PhD from Georgia State. She also has about 13 years experience in nursing and hospital administration, and she serves on the boards of the National Network of Public Health Initiatives and the Physician Innovation Network. So welcome, Dr. Minyard.
Thank you.
I'm thrilled to have you here today. So we were talking about the timeliness of this today as we were coming in. So we appreciate everyone listening that they will get the latest that we know, which is sometimes we're all looking at the news together, right? I wanted to talk a little bit just to give an intro on the Affordable Care Act. I think you cannot be at a dinner party or watching the news or whatever in the last year without hearing about changes that have already occurred as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and also more that were set to occur in 2014, which is perhaps maybe our biggest year of changes. So prior to 2014, we did see changes such as young adults getting extended coverage on their parents' policy until the age of 16, lifetime max limits kind of disappeared, decreased drug costs for Medicare recipients happened, and more preventive care was focused on. But beginning January 1, in the past 3 months, we are beginning to see the most transformative changes as Americans have to access affordable health care and essential health care or be penalized on their taxes for the first time ever. So the biggest changes this year, we're going to talk about guaranteed issuance of healthcare, pre-existing conditions going away, the creation of the marketplace, subsidies for people that qualify. We're going to learn what the qualifications are. And we'll talk about just a whole lot of changes for both individuals, some on the employer side, and because a lot of our listening audience is in the healthcare space, we'll talk a little bit about those individual doctors and what that means for them and if they're on panels or if they're not and that kind of thing. So I want to say at the top of the show, we were kind of joking before about how this is not a political show in any way. The country's somewhat polarized, it seems like, on this issue, but we're really here just to kind of inform people about what is happening from a bird's eye level. So that's kind of how we're going to start. So why don't we start, Dr. Minyard, with just clarifying some basic terminology for people that I still think, even when I talk to people in my social circles, people are still very confused about words like what is the marketplace, what is an individual mandate. So let's just kind of run through what you think is important that so they understand for the rest of the show what we're talking about.
I think you're right about folks needing to have the information when they're ready to hear it. So maybe this has been talked about, but it wasn't the time when the person really needed to pay attention to it. And so the situation is that we have a new marketplace where people can purchase insurance, and if they make between 100 and 400% of poverty, they would be able to have a subsidy to help pay the cost of their premium for insurance. This is the website that we've been hearing so much about, where people will go on the website or can work with an individual navigator to choose the insurance that they would like to have. And the law is set up such that there is a mandate that requires everybody to have insurance. In the first year, the penalty would be $95 per individual or up to 1% of taxable income, and that increases in the second and third years of implementation.
Yeah, so we're just in year one. So basically, if people have not been listening, you need to be covered or be prepared to pay a penalty. So that individual mandate has kicked in. And I want to tell the listeners the website that we're talking about, actually, so they can refer to it, is www.healthcare.gov.
Right.
Is the
right.
main website that we're talking about. So tell us a little bit about the marketplace. For people that have not been there, what can they kind of expect when they go there? How is it kind of organized?
Well, it's set up so that there are typically different products to choose from. It's set up so that there's a bronze, a silver, they call it the medals.
The medal plans.
And you can choose which plan you want. The more expensive plans have lower deductibles, as you might expect. Mm-hmm. And then the lower level bronze plan would have a higher deductible. Mm-hmm. And so because it's set up to have essential benefits, the benefits across the different products would be comparable. So it'd be easier than it has been in the past. Things would be organized so that you'd be able to choose your plan and be able to compare across plans. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges that people are running into that you mentioned right at the beginning is the issue about what is the network that is available to the individual through the plan. And many of the plans have very narrow networks. And so
their provider choice will be limited.
Right, which means that you would want to pay attention to that when you're signing up. You might want to check in and see if your preferred provider is in the network so that you don't get a surprise mm-hmm. when you get down the road.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, just location in Atlanta. I know there's a couple of carriers who really haven't been carriers in Georgia but now have come into the marketplace, and you may be driving quite a ways to see a provider. So it's not just your own provider, but how far will you need to go? Or if you're switching to a plan like Kaiser that's a kind of self-contained model, then you may have to go to actually a facility of theirs. So people will need to pay attention not only to the price and what the coverage is, but also where are they and who is in that
exactly.
network is what you're saying.
Exactly right.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk a little bit about the difference between state and federal. We were talking about how it's a federal mandate, but some states have elected to kind of control their own. Georgia is one that is going through the federal program, correct?
Right.
Okay.
So states had a choice. They could be in a federal health insurance exchange that's run by the federal government. They could be in a partnership with the federal government, or they could do their own health insurance exchanges. And so those states, not Georgia, Georgia is in the federal exchange, those states that implemented their own exchanges may have a little bit different way of doing it, a little bit of different set of rules because they're controlling it within their state.
Mm-hmm. And state to state, even though your family may be in a different situation in another state, you need to pay attention to what's your state because there's different carriers even in different areas. So I know
right.
a lot of people are talking across the country trying to figure out what to do, and it may be confusing because what's in one region may be totally different than
another
region. That's
exactly right. Yeah. My son-in-law is in Portland, Oregon, and I can't help him with Georgia information.
Right, right. So we're limited to what we know around us. So let's go back to basic terminology. We talked pretty much about the marketplace and the individual mandate. What are essential benefits? What's the concept of essential benefits?
Well, this is a concept of making sure that the basic benefits that folks would have are offered in all the plans. Mm-hmm. So you can be assured that each of the plans that's in the health insurance exchange or in the marketplace has the basic essential benefits. And over time, all of the insurance plans that are offered will have those essential benefits that mm-hmm. would be offered.
So would those be, for example, immunizations for children, a pap smear for women, you know, kind of what we think of as a standard of care,
basic standard of care. And also one of the things that has changed somewhat with the implementation of health reform is the preventive services mm-hmm. being offered without copay or deductibles. Mm-hmm. So there is a list of preventive services that would be offered within these plans without copay or deductible.
And the idea is if we take better care of ourselves up front, we'll certainly have a lot less cost and expense and time and trouble on down the road. So hence why they're paying up front without a barrier for preventive services.
Well, and you're touching on a part of the health reform law that is focused on health promotion and prevention. And there's one of the 10 titles of the law that focuses exclusively on health promotion and prevention, and then there are aspects throughout the rest of the law that push us in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back at the beginning. Another term that you spoke of was the federal poverty level. And people certainly, one of the big impetuses of this particular health care reform was so people that have not been covered would have an opportunity to be covered. And now we have subsidies, but they're based upon your income as compared to the poverty levels. So can you speak to what those are? How will people know if they're kind of in the ballpark to even have a subsidy considered?
So this minimum amount of income that a family needs to live for basic necessities, transportation, food, clothing, and it is varied by family size. So for example, an annual income of $15,500 for a family of two is the poverty level. And this is important, particularly in Georgia, because we don't have the Medicaid expansion. And so folks would need to have at least 100% of poverty to be eligible to get the subsidy in the health insurance exchange. If they made a little bit, even a dollar less, they would not be eligible.
Okay. And I would assume then if your family is bigger, then the number goes up. So if it's a family of eight, then it may not be that same number. It would be a higher number because you would need more to live. That's why you're giving us a scale.
And we're looking at a scale from 100% of poverty to 400% of poverty. 400% of poverty for a family of four is somewhere in the range of about $95,000. And so if you get above that exact amount, it's adjusted for inflation each year, then you wouldn't be eligible for a subsidy, or if you're below. And if you're in the range, there's a change. If it's 100%, 200%, 300%, mm-hmm. they're different amounts that you would have for your subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things people are talking about a little bit is that we haven't had a situation, you know, typically in the past, people would want to try to make their incomes look small so that they could be eligible for Medicaid, maybe. Mm-hmm. But now people are thinking in terms of how could I make sure I'm capturing all of my income so I can have at least the minimum. I know of situations where people might want to pick up
a
lawn mowing job or something, or gifts count to get a gift that gets them just over that hump to be able to be eligible, because the difference in premium, it could be very substantial.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that has surprised people the most. I was on the website with my daughter looking at the prices for everything from the bronze plan to the platinum plan. And I think people thought they were surprised by the deductible amounts and surprised by the per month costs still. So I think a lot of people think Affordable Care Act is free or very affordable, but really nothing is free in there that I've seen. Nothing is actually free.
No.
I also want to go back to a term, since we're kind of orienting people, and talk about what is a navigator.
Well, as part of the health reform law, it was set up that there would be people in each state who would be specially trained to be able to help people navigate through their decisions and to help them determine if they were eligible, maybe to help them use the website if they don't know how, and to actually help them understand their choices and to get enrolled.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the navigators can help with complicated cases or exceptions and are able to help people think that through.
So do you access a navigator from the website itself? Do you know? Maybe we'll have to maybe look at it. I don't know.
Yeah, we have information about the navigators, and they're also those who are, in some cases, attached with hospitals, who are able to also counsel people, and they're also at the fairly qualified community health centers who are access counselors to help people sort through. Okay. Another source of information are the brokers, and this has been an area of transition for them too, but they are another source of helpful information in this process.
We had not too long ago Jody Brainer, who's the president of the Health Underwriters Association of Georgia, and she actually brought in the book and was kind of going through some things. So if you're a listener out there, go on our website for the Doctors Roundtable Radio Show, and you can actually access some specific information about that particular question. I think we've gone through a lot of basic terminology. I would like to just kind of back up while we're at a bird's eye level and talk about the general idea of Affordable Care Act. You know, what are the goals that we're working toward in the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think if you step back, and one of the things we've done at the Health Policy Center is try to make sense of the 1,000 pages of the law, and what does it say, and how do you express that in a simple term or simple terms that people can understand. But basically, the idea is that if the law were implemented as it was originally designed, then most people would have health insurance, either through a Medicaid expansion or through being able to have a subsidy that makes it affordable for them in the health insurance exchange. And that this payment for that to happen would be able to come from some of the incentives that are focused on helping people be healthier and spend less on their health care. It would also come from making some cost and quality changes in Medicare. And then these fees, taxes, and penalties that we were talking a little bit about would also help to pay for the overall way that
program.
It's set up. And so it has the components of the Medicaid, the private insurance through the marketplace and the changes in the private market, the issues around improving quality and cost, which are many of those are focused on Medicare, and then the things that are in the law that are focused on health promotion that we mentioned earlier.
Okay. Now, I know we've had changes since the Affordable Care Act began. Through each year, we've had a few. I mentioned many at the beginning of the show.
I was looking at my notes. You covered most
of
them.
Covered a lot of them. Yeah. So I'd really like to jump into 2014 and talk about, this year, what are the keystones this year that are the changes that we're looking at? The individual mandate we've talked a lot about already.
I think the biggest thing is for 2014 is that if a state has the Medicaid expansion, it goes into effect. The health insurance marketplace opened up in the fall in order to allow people to sign up so that they could be insured through the marketplace. And so that set us up for that's the biggest part of the law, and that's what we're all, I think, probably mostly hearing about and focusing on right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then we've talked quite a bit about the changes for an individual. Do you have any other comments about the individual mandate or the marketplace or the tax penalty? As far as individuals are concerned, it affects other groups, though, also. So let's talk a little bit from the employer's standpoint. They are now going to have some compliance issues. And what does 2014 bring for an employer?
Well, there are some exceptions for employers because they've delayed some of the implementation as it relates to employers. But it's set up so that there are subsidies in place that it would allow employers of small firms that have 25 or less to be able to receive a tax subsidy if they offer insurance. This is mostly beneficial to small firms that have low-wage workers, but it can be a benefit to some.
Is this the SHOP?
Well,
or is that different?
That's different from the SHOP.
Okay.
This is a tax subsidy that actually has been in place for the last 2 years, and now it's going to be it's going to be expanded a little bit for this year and next year.
Okay. And so we talked about having to eventually work toward qualified plans, more of the idea of essential benefits being covered. That's kind of been delayed for, what, a year for the larger employer?
Right.
Okay,
right.
So they're still kind of got a reprieve, if they would. And then after that, they're going to have to incur penalties if they're not in compliance also, correct?
They will.
Okay. And then also I think they are there's new requirements as far as communications in terms of letting the employees know what their options are and kind of some new guidelines, if you would, for communicating about their health care coverage.
Well, and large employers are also required to enroll their employees. Now, the employee can choose to disenroll, but those large employers will be required now to enroll their employees in an insurance plan.
Okay. We were also talking a little bit earlier about the networks may be, through the plans on the marketplace, may be smaller than a lot of times people are used to here in Georgia. Can you speak a little bit to what healthcare reform means for healthcare providers? I know I still call on doctors and I sometimes hear, you know, I'm still trying to figure out if I'm on the plan, what's going on. It seems like there's still a lot of confusion with the providers.
Well, there are a lot of incentives in the healthcare law that create incentives for hospitals and physicians and other providers to work together, mm-hmm. to integrate their work. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about accountable care organizations. Mm-hmm. Another thing is bundled payments where the hospital and the physicians and all the other providers would get a certain amount of money for a particular episode of illness, and they would decide how that was going to be distributed among them. Mm-hmm. It's all focused on quality and efficiency and lowering cost. Mm-hmm. This is particularly evident in issues, like I said, around Medicare, where there are some new rules that have to do with hospital-acquired infections. Like when a person gets mm-hmm. an infection in the hospital, then they would not be paid by Medicare. Or if a person is readmitted to the hospital mm-hmm. within 30...
I'm hearing a lot about readmissions.
Within 30 mm-hmm. days, then... the hospital would not be paid. So this is pushing hospitals to think beyond their walls, to think about mm-hmm. partnerships with the community so that they can look at these issues. And they're complicated issues. I heard one story about a group in Maryland that was trying to sort through why people get readmitted. And so they went to a place where a lot of seniors lived and they started asking them questions. And what the people were saying in this particular place was that they often got readmitted to the hospital because they were hungry. Mm. And so that was a totally unexpected. Mm-hmm. So when these folks who were doing this community work went back to their bosses, they said, well, we're not in the business of food security. And so it's going to take a different kind of partnership and a different way of looking at things in order to sort through some of these complicated issues.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. What about the healthcare insurance industry, the insurers? What is affordable care? How is it affecting them?
Well, in all of the rules about the community rating, where people would could not be denied coverage, the rules related to only being able to have a limit on how long you wait, 90 days before you're able to get onto your new plan at your employer. All of these things are causing those in the insurance industry to have to
change your policies.
Change.
Yeah.
And so they have to decide, do they want to participate in the health insurance exchange? And if they do, then what are the products that they're going to offer and how are they going to structure it and how many are they going to offer? Are they going to offer bronze, silver, gold, and
different
platinum
levels.
And
mm-hmm.
how they're going to sort that? So that part. Then they have to deal with the other side of the market, and they have to deal with the other rules about the essential benefits and all of those different changes. And so it has created a lot of work. One of my colleagues' husband works with insurance and designing this, and she said they don't have a dining room anymore. Their whole dining room is stacked up with books and books, and all of his work is trying to redesign the products for his particular company in a way that's going to match with the market, that's going to match with the law, that's going to be good business. Mm-hmm. And then when there is a little change, like something comes out in the regulation that's a little bit different than what was anticipated, he's got to go back to all of his books and look again and think about it. And then, like even today with the conversation about expanding or lengthening the time, giving a little bit of reprieve from the enrollment, that creates an insurance issue. And so it is a major change.
And it shifts. It's just shifting.
And the other part is the insurance companies in the law are required to spend 85% of the money on the actual payment of care. And so that creates a different business model for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially for-profit. Yeah, for-profit insurance companies are really rethinking their margins. And
right.
How do we become competitive and how do we deliver the service so that we're having to give back and reinvest, I guess, if you would. So certainly changes in policies, changes in product offerings, pricing, kind of turning them upside down if you're in the insurance business too right now.
Right.
Yeah, so no one is exempt. Whether you're an individual, an employer, a provider, or healthcare, we are all learning as we go about how the Affordable Care Act affects us. Let's talk a little bit about there was a lot of anticipation coming into the marketplace opening, and we had the big snafu back in the fall in terms of it not the website itself not working how they expected and then having a time where it was fixed. What are some of your thoughts on since we've been opened, what you think would what you thought would happen being an expert in this field and what has happened?
Well, I think about in our work and trying to translate the health reform law, I think about it in three phases. Mm-hmm. The first phase was we were trying to understand, okay, what does that 1,000 pages say and how can we organize it and translate it? And then we started getting the regulations, and there have been a lot of them. And so we were trying to think about what does that mean? What do these regulations mean? How is it going to play out? And now we're in what I think of as the third phase, and that is what is actually happening on the ground. And this is much more complicated than we anticipated, because I think when the health reform law was implemented, it wasn't anticipated that there was going to be so much variation across states, and states would have the decision. So the Supreme Court ruling is one of the unanticipated things that happened, in that it gave more opportunity for states to decide not to participate in the Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. And
do you know how many states are participating?
About half.
Okay.
Most of the states that aren't participating are in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So that Supreme Court ruling was a surprise. I remember Liz and I were together watching the news the day it came out.
Everyone was tuned in.
And we had been anticipating, and we had actually, Liz had put together a couple of different briefs because we wanted to be quick in putting out a brief, but we didn't have one for this because we just didn't expect that to be the ruling. And then I don't think anybody really anticipated the response that there would be as many states that would decide not to expand and that it would be geographically dispersed. I don't think anybody anticipated, I know when you have a new any kind of a new electronic product, you're going to have some bumps. But I don't think anybody really and fully anticipated the magnitude of the challenge related to the rollout of the website. So that has been something that I think has been different than we anticipated. And the other thing that we didn't really know as we were doing our initial translations is these kind of cliffs and bumps in the marketplace. So if you make $1 less or $1 more, it could mean a whole lot of money different in your eligibility at the bottom and at the top. And then in the middle, there's some bumps related to issues of how much your deductible and would be. And so if you make another dollar, then you bump up into another category and you have a much higher deductible. And those things were not quite so apparent because we didn't have the plans and all the information that we have now. And so we were trying to think about, you know, if a person's navigating this, they have to think about, does my employer offer or not, and is it a plan that has the essential benefits and is affordable, and so do I want to go with my employer or not, and then what do I want to do about my children? Would they be eligible for Peach Care or not, and should I go in that road or should I go in a family plan, and how much is that going to be, and so the and is this going to put me over or under a bump or a cliff? And so I think we didn't anticipate, I mean, we knew this was a complex law, but we didn't anticipate the complexity of the decisions that individuals will be faced with. Now, over time, just like any other new big change, I think people are going to figure out these things, and people who are helping others are going to figure them out. But right now it's new and it is a challenge to navigate.
Do you feel like most Americans that visit healthcare.gov are able to navigate on their own and are aware of, like, you've brought a lot of details into the conversation just right here. I'm not sure around the kitchen table people know enough to think about if I'm a dollar over, a dollar under, I got kicked out or not.
I think that that the front end of the website has been revamped and is easier to navigate. I think people will be able to see the plans that they have the choice of, and I think they'll be able to learn based on their income what their subsidy would be so they can make a choice. They may not know every detail of the ramifications of their choice, which might lead them the next year to make a different choice.
And one of the things we were talking about, let's jump into the deadline extension, which we've heard in the news in the past 24 hours, I guess, that it sounds like there will be the potential that after the 31st for people that have been in process or some kinds of people may have more time, although we don't know how much more time. Can you share a little bit about what you know? And I know it's a moving target.
Right. So this is hot off the press.
Right.
My best knowledge about this is because I pored over the Wall Street Journal article before I
came
in here this
today.
Morning. I would have read it anyway, but I paid close attention. And what it said is that there would be an extension past the March 31st enrollment deadline under certain circumstances. And this would be for things like someone tried to sign up but wasn't able to navigate the system. Someone tried to sign up but their insurance company doesn't seem to have their information. Someone did a paper application with a navigator but it didn't make it into the system. Someone had a complication that is in process of being resolved. And the articles interviewed a representative from the federal government who said that they are not setting a specific date. They don't know if the process of these things that are in transition will happen in a few days or a few weeks. One piece of information that was in the article was that California, who has its own state exchange, has said that they are extending the deadline until the end of April. So, I mean, that gives you
a feel for
a hint for how people are thinking. I wouldn't anticipate that this is something where we're going to say, okay, we're going to have open enrollment the rest of the year. Mm-hmm. I think this is time
we'll
limited.
Point.
So if I were a person who was hadn't signed up yet, I mean, I would go ahead and get started and try to get enrolled. And I would not expect that I was going to have a long delay or that if I hadn't even started at all, I would be able to enroll after the deadline.
Yeah, so we're in the last few days. So all of you out there that are thinking, oh, good news for me, better log on, get busy, talk to a navigator, or get step one done. And stay tuned for what are the circumstances and what is the time end point, which we expect there to be one. Okay, very good.
Yes.
And you mentioned that you've walked through the three phases of let's see what they're talking about and then what does that mean for us and then what's really actually happening on the street. Do you think that's the end phase? Or do you think we'll continue to go have adjustments? Or what do you think is phase two? Well, or for the next phase from here?
When we were in phase one, I knew what phase two was going to be. Mm-hmm. When we were in phase two, I really didn't fully understand what phase three was going to be. I think all along I've known that the big picture phase is that this is a really big change that people have to adjust to. And people have to adjust on every level. And in our work, we have identified some things that are sort of the typical areas where people could think about how they're going to adjust to it. And this would range from individuals, to businesses, to providers, to state governments, different parts of the state government, people who work with different populations of people, who those particular populations of people might be impacted by some particular aspect of the law. And so we have these eight adaptive actions that we think about. How do I influence decisions if I want a decision to be different? Like some of the people we were meeting with recently said, if I could influence a decision, I would extend the deadline. Well, I think they sort of got their wish a little bit in that. How do I educate others? How do I strategically plan when everything is so uncertain? How do I stay abreast of the information as it comes out? How do I create the kind of partnerships that I need in order to navigate this? And for some of the different groups, there are issues of capacity, of workforce, information technology, and care coordination that play a big role in this. And so I haven't found a situation yet where asking and answering these eight adaptive action questions hasn't led to a pretty robust, forward-thinking way of how to deal with such a sweeping change.
Mm-hmm. So everybody's trying to figure out what it means for them, whether you're no matter where you're sitting around the table, individual, family, employer, health insurance carrier, whatever. So stay tuned. We'll keep having it unfold and adjust accordingly as we all adapt. Is kind of what you're saying, what I hear you saying. I want to talk a little bit, too, about the expectations. No matter what the end point is that we've gotten this little reprieve, there will come one. And then for people that have been covered, but then will have a trigger event like an adoption, the birth of a baby, the loss of my spouse's insurance, and that's who carried us, what will happen? Will the website be open? And if they have one of those events, they'll be able to enrolled during the year? What happens from this end point to when we have open enrollment again?
I think this is like it has typically been for those who have had employer insurance. And you have open enrollment in your employer insurance, and then when that time's over, then you're set for the year unless you have a significant event in your life. Mm-hmm. And in that case, you have the opportunity to modify your choice.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll have open enrollment again in the fall?
Yes.
So if you were not happy with your plan, you'd have a time to change. There will be a time period.
Or if you didn't enroll, you'd have a chance.
Time to go back in. Okay, very good.
I don't know what the exact timing of that will be mm-hmm. yet. Like this year, it was long. It started in October and went all the way now until sometime mm-hmm. in April. I don't anticipate it would be that long, mm-hmm. but
we haven't been able to anticipate everything.
We don't know.
Right, that's right. Well, we're almost to the end of the show, and I want to do a couple of things before we part ways here. One is just get your thoughts on, you have been in this business of seeing this unfold now for several years. What is encouraging you about the changes that you're seeing, and what is concerning you about the changes that you're seeing?
Well, I'm encouraged that more people would have access to coverage that they didn't have before. Mm-hmm. I also like that sometimes in the past we've had situations where people felt like they had to stay with their current employer.
Mm-hmm. They were limited.
They could
based on health insurance.
They couldn't
coverage.
Switch because of their coverage, and so this creates an opportunity for people to have more flexibility about their work. Now, one of the flexibilities about that, I guess, could be a little bit of a downside because what if you were working and you really didn't want to work as many hours, but you had to work that many hours to keep your insurance, but now you'd be able to perhaps go in the health insurance exchange and you wouldn't have to work as many hours. And there's been a recent Congressional Budget Office report about the fact that that part of the law may create fewer man hours mm-hmm. of working because of the people who would have flexibility not to work full time or to make transitions in their work because they have more flexibility with their insurance.
Yeah, I think work hours and the coverage has been a hot topic throughout this enrollment period. Yeah.
So
what concerns you? So you're encouraged by those things. What concerns you?
Well, I think the complication of it. Mm-hmm. And so we have a team of a dozen people, economists,
still
health policies, public health, an attorney, studying this, understanding it, combing through it, making sense of it. And we're working hard to keep up with mm-hmm. it. And we're looking, so as soon as we get we've gotten the information about the Georgia plans, we've been able to start making sense and see that there are geographic differences in Georgia and where these, what we were talking about, cliffs and bumps. Mm-hmm. Then I think for a person who's just trying to get their insurance, it's a lot to take in. Mm-hmm. And so the complexity of it mm-hmm. is concerning to me.
Yeah. I think it's been overwhelming for some people. I think it's been overwhelming for a lot.
And the other thing is I still think that there's a lot of uncertainty of what will happen next. Because all along we've looked at, okay, what are the legal challenges and what's going to happen with them? What's going to happen with the regulation? And then and we see, even today, a change in the regulation. And then the other part is, would there be any legislative changes that mm-hmm. might cause things to be different? Mm-hmm. So
do you think this uncertainty has been part of the reason why the projected enrollment has not been what was expected? Because people are still confused, trying to figure it out. It is overwhelming. They don't know.
Right. They don't know. And the website didn't work. Mm-hmm. I mean, that together. Mm-hmm.
Or people have a wait and see. People have a wait and see mm-hmm. mentality. Year one, it's too crazy. I'll take my chances. I haven't been covered. I'll wait and see and take the penalty because it's affordable to me this year. May not be in year four, but for right now it is.
Like one of our colleagues said this morning, I'll just pay the $95. Yeah. Maybe it'll be different next year.
That's right. Yeah. So a lot of people making that choice not to participate and just pay the freight this year. Well, I certainly know that in the across the state, probably nationally and certainly in our city, that your office serves as a resource center for interpretation of the law and what the policy changes are and new regulations that come out. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you're organized and what your office serves at and how people can reach you or access information out of your office?
Well, I think, I guess probably there's a lot of information on our website, and they can certainly contact the Health Policy Center. And should I say website?
Yeah, please say the website.
So it's www.gsu.edu/GHPC. So it's Georgia State University and it's Georgia Health Policy Center. Also, you could send the questions. They could call at the Health Policy Center, 404-413-0314. Or an email to ghpc@gsu.edu. And we get questions and we have the team, and depending on the question, then we could, if it's simple, we can answer it, or we often, depending on the complexity of it, bring our team together and say, okay, what do we all know? What are we all hearing? How would we interpret this? What's the best answer we can give for this? And so we're always trying to keep up to date. We had a session in the last few weeks where we just sat down and said, okay, what's happened on the ground? What's happening in Georgia? What's happening nationally? What does this mean? How do we translate it? And how do we create the opportunity for people to understand as much as they can as soon as they can?
Yeah, well, I want to thank you for coming today and giving us a record of for what a lot of people is basic information for maybe the first time they're hearing it or they're just ready to hear it, as you pointed out, and for being the resource. And just to let you know, you've been very accessible in and around town and speaking and trying to get the word out on what your office knows and what your interpretation is. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well,
I enjoyed it.
It was a great time today. Appreciate you coming. For all you listeners out there, thanks so much for tuning into this hot, timely, and relevant topic. Go back and visit our website, also that of our sponsor, www.healthgate.com, to get more information about the Affordable Care Act and what it means for you. Thanks for tuning in.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week and thank you for listening.